Here's Andy Udman.
Really, a perfect storm is being created in kids' lives from all these different things, and it's leading to more and more symptoms in our children. So what I see is that there are seven areas where we see deteriorating stressors impacting the child: nutritional, environmental, educational, familial, cultural, traumatic, and relational.
And I don't know about you, Andy, but when I was a kid, I didn't see these mental health problems when I was among my peers. There's something very wrong today. Our children are not well, and we need to look at nutrition as part of the solution to the problem. We can't just keep turning to drugs for answers.
Maternal depression is one that I'm beginning to realize is just a very significant concern. If mom is depressed, the child has four times the risk of being labeled. And this is not just with depression, but it's with behavioral issues, attentional issues, anxiety disorders.
Folks, you can do me a huge favor right off the top. Please phone me right now and tell me, this is all hooey, that every child you know is happy. Every child you know is happy and healthy for the most part, and they have their little bumps and bruises, and someone said something annoying, but no, overall, they're just so well adjusted. And all this stuff about our kids being screwed up and messed up is just hooey. Please call me right now and tell me, 643-1290, because the picture I'm getting is exactly the opposite. Pam Colleen likes to say we're sicker, we're fatter, we're more depressed than ever. And sadly, it's more true of our children than it is of us as adults. My wife and I are going to babysit tonight. We have two wonderful small grandchildren. Don't get me started on them. That'll take up the hour. But at this point, they're just wonderfully healthy and happy. Our Carter is one. Hannah is three. So we're not out there in the big wide world yet. We're dealing with things like Carter using the remote to try to start the piano because he knows the piano makes noise and he can't figure out why the remote does. It starts the TV, but it doesn't start the piano. I mean, it's a wonderful stage. But Pam Colleen, first of all, welcome to the show this morning.
Thank you, Andy.
Parents need to listen to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you have a guest, and I've been watching his videos this morning. Well, let me just read a short portion of what Pam Colleen wrote in her book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. Scott Shannon is a child psychiatrist and leads the first university-based integrative child psychiatry study in the clinic in the United States at University of Colorado's Children's Hospitals. The author of the book, Please Don't Label My Child, which is a topic all by himself. I mean, our kids are facing, I guess, what he calls the perfect storm today. What's this perfect storm?
Well, the perfect storm basically means there are so many variables that are together right now that are compromising the health of our children, both physically and mentally. And what Dr. Shannon considers first and foremost is nutrition. That's the number one thing on his list that he looks at in terms of helping children. It's not drugs that are the first solution to the problem. It's nutrition.
Let's look at the problem first, and then later on we'll move to what some of the solutions are. But would you introduce Dr. Scott Shannon?
Yes, good morning, Dr. Shannon. Welcome.
Good morning.
You're calling from Colorado this morning.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Doctor, there's a lot of parents today, and I always start out by saying, God bless you if you have the courage to be a parent. And hopefully you got into this thing on purpose and with resolution to do your very best to raise your child in a healthy environment. Doctor, let's just start with the larger pictures before we get into the individual issues. It takes a lot of courage to be a parent in today's world.
Well, I think it's really the toughest job that a person could ever have. It's so complicated, it's changing, there's no manual, and every child is unique. So it's a challenge unbeknownst to anyone else in any setting. So
let me ask you, let's play 10 questions here. When you were a kid, let's pick grade 4. Was there any kid in your class whose parents were divorced?
Not that I knew of.
Was there any kid in your class who had asthma?
No.
Was there any kid in your class who had allergies?
Not that I knew of.
Was there any kid in your class who was in therapy?
No, definitely not.
Was there any kid in your class who was obese?
No.
Okay, now let's take the average grade 4 class in London, Ontario today. And what would it show, Pam?
Well, the Thames Valley District School Board did a survey a year ago, and the teachers were filled out surveys asking them about the mental health status of their children, their students. And the conclusion of this survey said that over 25% of our children here in London have some sort of mental health problem.
We're gonna ask Pam to repeat that, Doctor, because that to me is just shocking. I have that study in front of me. It shows that more than one in four, between 25% and 30% of kids are
have some sort of mental health issue.
Well, that's not a unique finding. One study looking at in Pittsburgh in the United States found that the rate of childhood psychiatric diagnosis in pediatric office charts had tripled in the last 25 years. The use of medication in children has tripled in the last 15 years. And a World Health Organization survey of countries all around the world found that the United States had the highest levels of pediatric psychiatric illness and psychosomatic symptoms.
Now, when I go into schools, even here in London, I see the kids eating lots of junk. I see the schools selling a lot of junk food in the school still to this day. When I was a kid, we didn't have these types of foods in the school system whatsoever.
No, vending machines with soda. I mean, that's a unique introduction in the last 15 or 20 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck, Doctor, by, I call them, I'm trying to remember what you called them in one of the videos that I watched this morning, the seven time bombs. Almost sounded like the Book of Revelations in the Bible about I mean, you're almost sounding like the bugler of the apocalypse. Before we get into all the seven categories of areas in which children face enormous challenges, do you find yourself hopeful or some days a little overwhelmed at the challenges parents face today trying to give their children a healthy upbringing?
Well, I'd say both. I'm both very disturbed by these trends, but hopeful because with some education and fairly simple parenting choices, we can turn these things around, and kids routinely do. So,
well, why don't we do that? In just a moment, we'll start to turn this thing around and identify what are the challenges, what are the solutions. When we come back with Dr. Scott Shannon in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
And I don't know about you, Andy, but when I was a kid, I didn't see these mental health problems when I was among my peers. There's something very wrong today. Our children are not well, and we need to look at nutrition as part of the solution to the problem. We can't just keep turning to drugs for answers.
Folks, I want to tell you, it's not Pam Colleen who says our kids are messed up. Listen to this report I'm reading from the London Free Press. From, I'm just checking the date, March 30th, 2011. The headline, quarter of kids have mental health woes. Thames Valley teachers were surveyed in an effort to build a plan for services. The article written by Jennifer O'Brien. In excess of one in four students in the Thames Valley District School Board. And you know who that is. That's London, Ontario. That's St. Thomas, Ontario. That's Woodstock, Ontario. Strathroy, Ontario. In excess of one in four students in the Thames Valley Board suffers from mental health issues. Pam, I can hardly wrap my mind around that. I mean, Dr. Shannon was talking about American kids. We need to recognize this is London, Ontario, where we have these issues.
That's right. That's right. It's a very pervasive problem today. And when they talk about services, what kind of solutions they're going to propose, unfortunately, I don't think that they're going to look at nutrition.
Let's look at the problem first. Before we look at the solution, we always look at and identify the problem. In your book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, Pam, you write about Dr. Shannon, that he has been helping children recover from attention deficit disorder. That's the one, Dr. Shannon, that I hear so much about. Is that one of the most common issues in the classroom today?
Oh, certainly. It's rampant in almost every classroom.
How rampant?
Well, right now, when I first entered training, the talk was it was about 1% to 2% of kids, and now the discussion is around 10%, 6% to 8% to 10%. I'm seeing estimates and studies
But there are other labels too, Dr. Shannon. It's not just ADD, ADHD. There's obsessive compulsive disorder. There's anger. There's all sorts of other emotional problems that we're seeing with our children today as well.
Depression has become epidemic in kids.
See, doctor, let me ask, depression in kids, I mean, I'm thinking back when I was a kid. I was a little upset once in a while if I couldn't stay up as late. But depression in kids?
Well, you know, it used to be when I entered training, there was a debate about whether kids could experience depression. And then 25 years later, one of the experts at the University of Vermont, David Fassler, is saying that 1 in 4 children will experience serious, significant depression by the age of 18.
Wow. Now, you run a center called the Wholeness Center. You consider the health of the whole, like, you consider the whole child in terms of their health. You don't just say the problem is within the brain and here's a drug to fix the problem. Can you explain all the different variables that you address when you're treating a child?
Well, it is a holistic approach. So we look at body, mind, spirit. We look at their physical environment, mental, emotional states, social situation. We look at their diet, their sleep, their exercise. We look at their spiritual foundation. We look at their educational setting. So we really try to be very comprehensive because modern science is telling us that epigenetics and neuroplasticity make the child extremely responsive to whatever they're immersed in.
And when you start working with a child, can you, when you're looking at their diet, for example, what types of things are you seeing and what are you changing within the diet?
Well, one of the first things we look at is to see if the child has had food issues since the very start. So we look to see if they had colic as a youngster, reflux, where they couldn't keep their food down, if they had ear infections, if they had skin problems, asthma. These things are all indicative of hidden allergies. So we look at those things, and if that is the case, then we begin to take foods out of their diet. It's not adding things that are expensive to it. It's merely pulling out things like dairy, corn, soy, wheat, that are common allergens that kids and families don't know about. And as we do that, we see significant improvements. Often we need to do supplementation, and often we need other supports as well. But diet is often structurally one of the first things we do.
And you see a lot of children drinking a lot of caffeinated beverages today, and that can provoke a lot of symptoms as well.
Well, I think it's just, you know, the caffeine sometimes contributes to anxiety and sleep issues. But I think the fact that kids are just drinking soda, which are not only worthless calories, but they're actually damaging because of the high fructose corn syrup. So it's just a symptom of a bigger problem.
Let me ask you, doctor, if I could, about the 7 time bombs, I call them. I'm not sure which one you would put at the top of the list, but let me just go down the 7 and then ask you which one nutrition fits in and how high on the list. There's nutrition. In terms of trying to explain complications in a child's life, nutrition, environment, education, family, cultural issues, traumatic issues. You mentioned Columbine in one of your videos, and relationship issues. Now, that's the list, but how would you, if you were to put them in terms of their importance, what would be right at the top of the list?
Well, I think nutrition is at the top of the list because it is something that has changed so much in the last 40 years that probably as much as any reason for the differences in these problems we're seeing in our kids, the changes in diet may be the number one reason.
And what have you seen? I know in our interview in my book, we talked about 3 whole meals, sitting down and having family meals, making meals from scratch. So this is basically what we've moved away from, isn't it?
Yes, I think whole foods, you know, sort of foods that your grandmother would recognize as a food, these are things that have just sort of fallen away, and we're going to highly processed foods, we're going to high glycemic load foods, that is foods loaded with sugar, we're going with foods with hydrogenated oils, which are thankfully now being recognized as poisons and being outlawed and regulated against in many situations, settings around the world. So we've got a lot of things in our food, and the food quality has deteriorated significantly. A couple studies out of England show that additives and dyes deteriorate the ability of kids to focus and attend. So there's one reason why we're seeing such high rates of ADHD.
Let's take the just a snapshot of our society. Pam has mentioned guys in prison, women in prison. If we were to take them and roll the tape back and give them wonderful nutrition from day one, do you think there is a significant fraction of them would not be in prison if they'd had proper nutrition right from day one?
Well, it certainly would help. There are actually studies done where they take kids in school. I think one study out of Wisconsin, and improve their school food, and they see improved school performance and improved school attendance. Now, one interesting study out of England looking at incarcerated prisoners, just giving them a multivitamin, decreased violent acts by over 33%. So nutrition is a key role in a lot of these behavioral concerns.
Sometimes people hear a fact like that and it doesn't quite register, but that's an absolutely fascinating fact. Can you roll that last 30 seconds past us again so we can wrap our minds around it? Because, we have health care budgets in Ontario. I don't know about in the U.S. Well, I know because I hear it on Diane Sawyer talking about it on ABC News all the time. Health care budgets, which are exploding. So a little nugget like you just gave us is incredibly important. Can you give us that again, Doctor?
Study out of England by a fellow by the name of Gesh looked at incarcerated young adult prisoners, 18 to 25, and provided them with micronutrient supplementation, i.e. a multivitamin, and found that their violent acts and aggression decreased between 27 and 33%.
And similar studies have been done on fish oil as well.
Certainly, fish oil has been shown to improve mood status in a variety of different populations.
Well, we have a prime minister who has just passed a crime bill, which has a heavy focus on building more prisons. What would you do with the money that we're now directing toward building more prisons?
Well, certainly, if you're looking to the long run, it would make more sense to invest in nutrition, nutritional support, parenting support, and early mental health intervention, and spending that money in prisons downstream.
We're making a big effort here in London, Ontario, to get good breakfast programs into our schools. We have had a hard time admitting that in London, Ontario, we pride ourselves on being a very civilized and progressive city. We're embarrassed that we have now had to feed our children breakfast because they have such a poor nutrition regimen at home. We now have breakfast programs in a majority of our schools. Is that a good investment, Doctor?
Well, I think it'd be a good investment if you're feeding the kids well. And what we've seen is that often they're feeding the kids waffles and
Sunny D, the Sunny Delight, Sunny D. I mean, I've seen some of the menus in these breakfast programs, and it's abysmal.
Some studies looking at kids show that they actually perform worse in school if they're given a high glycemic load breakfast than if they didn't eat at all.
Can you explain hypoglycemia and what you just were referring to there with blood sugar levels?
Well, what happens in kids is that they don't have any food at all. They have a blood sugar that's fairly low, but it's more consistent. And if they're given a high glycemic load, a very sugary, simple-to-break-down breakfast, what happens is their blood sugar spikes, their insulin levels spike, then their blood sugar falls, and that's where the problem occurs with the crash 1.5 to 2 hours later. And they're either worthless in terms of focus and attention, or they're irritated, aggressive, or asleep.
Doctor, we have to take a short break for a news update, but when we come back, there's a lot of parents who are listening right now, and I sense they're asking, hey, little Michael, little Jessica is having issues in school. If you knew nothing more than that, just that they're having issues in school, behavioral issues, what shoots to the top of the list as the number one thing to consider? We'll be asking Dr. Scott Shannon that question when we come back in just a moment, right here in London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
What I see is that there are seven areas where we see deteriorating stressors impacting the child: nutritional, environmental, educational, familial, cultural, traumatic, and relational.
And I don't know about you, Andy, but when I was a kid, I didn't see these mental health problems when I was among my peers. There's something very wrong today. Our children are not well, and we need to look at nutrition as part of the solution to the problem. We can't just keep turning to drugs for answers.
I was just listening to that clip, and I'm thinking, what of all those factors that Dr. Scott Shannon has just run down, which one you would want to make sure are absolutely looked after? The seven big time bombs, as I call them, in a child's life. And we've been talking about nutrition. Andy Udman, along with Pam Colleen, in conversation with author Dr. Scott Shannon. Dr. Shannon, let me ask you, first of all, in this segment, about the name of your book, Please Don't Label My Child. What was the one experience, the one moment, the one story that said to you, that's what you should put down as the name of your book?
Well, I had a parent come to me telling me about their child, and they were looking for a label that I could give the child so they would know what the problem was. And as I began to look at the child and what was going on in their life, I realized that was part of the problem, is that the parent was looking to identify the child as wrong or broken rather than looking at the things that we could fix. And that just became a sort of a turning point. And I began to become much less comfortable with labeling kids and identifying their brains as broken and trying to medicate them than trying to look underneath the hood and see what was going wrong in their life and what we could do to make things better for them.
So when you take your child to a doctor or a psychiatrist or a counselor because he or she is having issues in school or with their friends, don't you expect that they're going to choose from their 346 little categories and pin one little label on your son's forehead?
Well, often that's what happens, but unfortunately, that is not, I think, the best way to go about solving the problems, because once you identify and label the child, you stop looking for things that are contributing to that problem. And it just doesn't make sense in terms of the science that we know.
So what should the doctor be doing if he doesn't give you a label?
I think the doctor should give you a list of the 5 or 10 things that need to change in that child's life to help them to do better.
Now, one phenomenon that's going on today that is a big concern for me is the video game addiction issue. And I see kids who can't use a knife and a fork. They don't know how to use a knife and a fork because they're just eating out of bags, for example. They're so busy with their video games that they're not sitting down to eat healthy, wholesome meals.
Well, the sort of progressive addiction to video games has cost kids in a number of ways. Number one, it's sort of robbing them of sort of social experience and social skills. And number two, it's really inhibiting their brain development in terms of learning other things that they need to accomplish. One, using forks, as you mentioned, but also just that in terms of the school development and emotional development that they need. And a recent study shows that when kids are exposed to violent video games, they have brain changes that last for as much as a week after they stop playing.
But the video game industry basically absolves themselves of any fault here.
Well, it does, and they'll put out, you know, 2 studies showing that it's not a problem for every 1 study that independent scientists put out saying it's a concern. But I think it's a growing problem.
Doctor, it's not just about nutrition. Nutrition is a key element. Can you go through, and this is a part of the video that I most recall and have been wrestling with, those 7 big issues, and just make a quick comment about the subtitles under each one. Could you do that?
Sure. Happy to. Well, in terms of nutrition, we can look at reduced intake of trans fats, enhancing omega-3, essential fatty acid intake, increasing magnesium intake with soy, nuts, and greens, reducing sugar intake and glycemic load, reducing or eliminating caffeine, making sure they have enough protein, and then looking at supplementation. So those are the key areas under nutrition that I highlight. Under environmental, making sure they get enough sleep, making sure they get enough sunlight, making sure the pesticides and herbicides they're exposed to are limited as possible. Limiting noise pollution, making sure there's not, you know, 3 television sets on in the house at once. Making sure their air is clean, making sure they have enough time in nature, and then monitoring the amount of electromagnetic force that they get. Headsets are a better idea than cell phones to the ear often. Mm-hmm. And then in the educational arena, reducing the size of schools, the pace of academic pressure, broadening the support of learning styles, and then just allowing kids to develop more normally at a pace. Familial time, we need to make sure parents have enough time with their kids, ritual and tradition. We need to find a way to build family connections. Culturally, we must look at the issue of spirituality versus materialism, look at the violence and aggression in our kids' lives, make sure that they're not being exposed to too much sexually charged images, limit the pace and tempo of their life, and that they have an active lifestyle. Mm-hmm. As we move into trauma, recognizing trauma is much more common than we think, and that violence in our media can affect kids and how they think and react, so that there can be some peace and quiet in their world. And then finally, in the relational area, looking at schedules, looking at the sense of community, and looking at depressed moms. Because what we're seeing is that as more and more moms are depressed, that becomes a bigger problem for our kids.
You see, parenting isn't that tough. Oh, my goodness, doctor. Those are seven categories. Each one we could spend an hour on. Let me just jump right into the middle of that list. The size of schools. We have, and I don't know whether you're concerned more at the primary level or the secondary level, but we have some mega high schools in London. I mean, Saunders High School, Beale High School, I mean, they're all about 1,500 to 2,000 kids. Is that a healthy environment for our kids to be in their formative years?
Well, based on the whole factory model, it's cheaper. There's some economies of scale that come from putting, actually, in the United States, we have some schools that are 4,000 to 5,000 kids each. And so it's cheaper, but is it better? And a number of things, number of studies looking at that process see that kids graduate more, they learn more, they attend better in a small school.
Now, the system that you're describing that you use at your center, you're spending a lot of time to investigate the child, the family. A lot of doctors are just, you know, they're not going to do that. They're not going to spend the time that you may take to actually investigate the child's situation thoroughly. It's much easier for a doctor to simply write a prescription.
It is. It is easier. And that's why I think so many of my peers have fallen into that. But I've just found that it's much more satisfying to do it with this sort of comprehensive approach.
Doctor, when our kids mess up at school, when they have issues, when you start dreading the parent-teacher interviews, often the topic comes up, well, take them to a doctor. Let me ask you, as a doctor, what in the heck does the average doctor know about these seven categories? Let's go through. What does a doctor know about nutrition? We're learning more and more, virtually nothing.
I went to medical school, about an hour to 2 hours was spent on it, mainly looking at it. Did they get enough calories? And that was about it.
Mm. The environment, education, family, values, trauma, relational issues. I mean, the doctors know nothing more about these seven time bombs than Uncle Charlie.
Well, that may be true, but I think there's good practitioners, good doctors everywhere, and some people will take a thoughtful approach and try to get to know their patients. So
I think the system needs to be examined closely, because I do think that doctors want to see their patients get well. Unfortunately, there are just so many limitations out there.
Yeah, I think doctors feel pressured by their healthcare system, by insurance, by the reimbursement models, where it's a volume model. You just got to keep pushing people through. It's a factory model.
Doctor, as you look at the state of America today, and by extension Canada, what alarms you the most in terms of the direction our children are headed?
I think what concerns me the most is I'm seeing a bigger and bigger group of kids that are just not happy. They're depressed, they're anxious, they're uneasy, they're unsatisfied, and that number is growing every year.
Now, you've been a psychiatrist for how many years?
Oh, 25.
And 25 years ago, what did you see then that you're not seeing today?
Well, I think I saw a slower, less complex life, and that I saw kids in general enjoying themselves a bit more and a bit less pressured and burdened by what they're having to deal with every day.
If we don't quickly figure out some solutions here, doctor, I know one thing, and that is our healthcare budgets are simply going to overwhelm us. Let's pick one issue, obesity in children.
Well, we know that rates of obesity in children have tripled in the last 20 years. Now we're seeing rates of obesity of 20 to 33% in the United States. Luckily, Colorado is the least obese state in the union, if that's something to celebrate. But Perhaps not.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is our rates of obesity, that they're the best in the country, 15 and 20 years ago were the worst in the country. And what that means is the country is just getting so much more obese.
It's amazing, Doctor, the impact that you're having there in Colorado. No, I'm just being facetious. But you must take some pleasure in that. But let's just continue the conversation about obesity. That's not just a three-year phase in a child's life. That's a lifetime recipe for medical issues.
Oh, yes. An obese child is a more depressed child. It's a less successful child. It's a child that consumes much more health care, and it's a child that has a much shorter life, unfortunately.
I like to keep my promises, and I promised earlier to ask you the question about little Johnny or Jessica starting to develop issues at school without knowing anything more. Where does your mind go in terms of the most likely issue in their life?
As I mentioned before, I start by looking at their nutrition just because it's such an easy fix in some ways that we can turn their diet around and often turn their behavior around.
Now, there's a recent story here in Canada where a Canadian judge ruled that a teenage boy murdered his friend because of the effects of Prozac. The side effects of some of the psychiatric drugs are getting to be more and more well known about the suicidal and homicidal thoughts that go along with some of these drugs.
Well, certainly we see a broad range of risks for kids on psychiatric medicine, and probably in my practice these days I spend as much time taking kids off psychiatric medication as I do putting them on, because the risks of irritability, aggression, sedation, obesity, etc. are very significant and present with many of these medications.
Yes, I saw Dr. David Healy speak yesterday at McMaster University, and his new book is out. It's called Pharmageddon, and he's taken a very long and hard look at some of the side effects of these drugs. It's quite shocking when you go into the literature and actually see.
Well, I think what we're seeing now is that if you indeed medicate aggressively across the board, the side effects of that in terms of the medication issues are significant, but also in terms of the loss of other things that we could be doing for these kids. We've sort of lost sight of changing their nutrition, changing the parenting, giving them some coping skills. And if we just sort of move to quickly blame the brain and medicate the child, there's a lot of things that we just can't do for the kids at that point.
Well, we can't separate the brain from the rest of the body. I mean, what we put in our mouth is going to affect our brain.
Yeah, it seems obvious to me, but it's and it seems like it's based in very solid science, but many people ignore that fact.
Doctor, we have to take a short break. When we come back in our final little segment, and it'll be fairly short, I'm going to challenge you to talk directly to the parents in our audience. Where do we get started turning it all around? When we come back with Dr. Scott Shannon in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
And I don't know about you, Andy, but when I was a kid, I didn't see these mental health problems when I was among my peers. There's something very wrong today. Our children are not well, and we need to look at nutrition as part of the solution to the problem. We can't just keep turning to drugs for answers.
In the short time that we have left, folks, I want you to have a really solid takeaway from this discussion. Even if you have joined us just now, we are in conversation with Dr. Scott Shannon. And what I want to challenge the doctor to do in just the moments that we have left is, number one, define the problem and then give us at least a start to the solution. I am looking at this article in the London Free Press from March 30th of last year. The headline, "Quarter of Kids Have Mental Health Woes." That says it all. Between 25 and 30% of our kids have mental health issues. Dr. Shannon, can you define the issue? Then we'll get to the problem. In fact, the problem you said is so serious, you've issued a call to arms to try to fix it. But first, what is the state of the health of our kids today?
Well, the state of health for our kids is concerning, distressing. I think we're seeing more and more kids that are struggling. We're seeing kids that are unhappy, kids that are anxious, kids that are aggressive and angry, kids that have poor coping skills. And I think the concern for parents and for everyone is that we need to begin to pay attention to these issues and begin to bring some help and support to these kids.
Okay. But how do we also examine the system that we're working within, Dr. Shannon?
Well, I think we have to challenge the system that we're working within to make sure they're addressing all these issues in kids' lives, issues that can be changed rather than just simply labeling and medicating children.
Do you think our governments have a clue what they're doing to address these issues?
Well, I think the governments just look to experts, and I think our experts tend to look at the way things are done. And the way things are done is often influenced very significantly by pharmaceutical industry funding and support.
In other words, you're saying the solution, folks, for many of these issues is not at Shoppers Drug Mart. It's at Metro. It's at your grocery store, not your drug store. Is that simplistic, Doctor?
It may be simplistic, but it's a good way to frame it and a good way to start. For example, I think one of the best things that parents can do for their kids is to make sure they get off each morning with a high-protein breakfast. Mm-hmm. That may be the simplest, best thing that parents can take away from this is start the kid well each day.
And to avoid the inner aisles of a grocery store is probably another one of your suggestions.
Right. Stay away from the highly processed foods, whole grains, whole foods, and make sure there's plenty of protein in each meal.
Okay, in the 1 minute, ideal breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, an ideal breakfast for a child might be something like a couple eggs, some carbohydrates such as potatoes or toast, and then some fruit. That's a decent breakfast, and just watching the sugar load with that and trying to stay away from sugary drinks.
Lunch?
Lunch, a sandwich, maybe with some meat in it, and an apple, and some water. It's okay to drink water.
And dinner?
In dinner, I think sort of a home-cooked meal, a traditional meal is not bad. Make sure there's some a source of complex carbohydrates, source of protein, and some vegetables and or fruit. And if you want some snacks, things like nuts or string cheese, yogurt.
And the rule on texting during dinner?
No, I think families need... One of the things that's clear is we need more ritual time, we need more family time, we need more FaceTime. And so I think having a sit-down meal not only helps digestion, but it really helps in a lot of other ways.
Well, I wish we had more time because I'd like to ask you about some of those relationship issues and the kids who can't go 5 minutes without texting someone, sending up to 300 a day. But that's an issue for another day. Dr. Scott Shannon, give us some information for those who want to pursue this, get more information about you, your book, your website.
Well, my website is wholeness.com. It talks a bit about my clinic, and we have resources and references and gives people a different take on how to approach mental health problems. My book is Please Don't Label My Child. I've got a new one coming out from Norton in a few months, and it's called Mental Health for the Whole Child. And I'm just trying to change the way we think about children and mental health.
That's fantastic.
Doctor, thank you so much for joining us, and all the best with your work.
My pleasure, Andy and Pam. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Well, again, we come, Pam, right back to where we started, that one quarter mm-hmm. of our kids are messed up. They have mental health issues.
That's right. At the Total Health Show this year in Toronto, the weekend of April 20th, I'm going to be doing a talk on nutrition and children and their brains. And Alan Castles, whom we've had on the show a couple of times, he's going to be speaking about the overdrugging of children here in Canada. So that's the weekend of April 20th in Toronto at the Convention Center.
Terrific. Pam, always compelling. Thank you so much for today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Andy.
And your website, which people are always asking me about?
Is www.pamkilleen.com.
Terrific. K-I-L-L-E-E-N. Folks,